I believe that every small business owner has an ego. They don't go, even Jordan Peterson has an ego. You have to have an ego. So you have to understand that when somebody comes up to you, and we've talked about this, at least when people are sitting here in these chairs, like, why do people sit here? It's part of the ego. People get in businesses all the time because of ego, because somebody told them that they were great. Their mother, their father, their bishop, their teacher, their brother, their uncle, their brother-in-law. And they're like, and they believed them.
I learned that lesson from this podcast, which is you're not paid for how hard you work or what you know. You're paid for your the value that you bring to society and the value of your skills. All right, Jeff Crane, we've probably been talking an hour before this.
At least. We should have been recording this whole time. It was awesome, dude.
Yeah, I love that. But let's, you were just talking to me about
Pulp Fiction.
Starting a business.
I want to just say, can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
It's getting near Christmas. It might date this podcast or whatever. And I feel like this is a Christmas gift. I've wanted to be on this podcast for months, dude.
You're great, man.
And then the other day you're on Facebook like, who'd like to be on a podcast? I'm like, bro, I got to go in.
Yeah.
So thanks for the invite.
Dude, I love you being here, man.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I've had such a great conversation with you. And we know a lot of same people.
Yeah.
And you know a lot more people than I'm like, I don't even know half the people you know. You know a lot of people.
We just connect, man. We just get together and Utah's really tight knit. So you just get a different side of the valley, man. Every time you go out to one of these events or whatever, but you know that.
I do.
Yeah, you know that. Yeah, but tell me, so you were breaking this down.
I was.
And then I was like, nah, this is what we got to record.
Okay, so I started off with my hand here with, in business, there's five phases of business, right? Idea, development, startup, growth, exit. And most people start with the idea.
Yeah.
I start with the exit. And so what I was talking about was, I call it the Pulp Fiction kind of theory. In Pulp Fiction, you had John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson, and they're in the diner, and they're the OGs. And then across, you had the guy and the gal that were the real, they were the gangsters are trying to rob the place. Remember that?
Yeah.
So they stood up and like, everybody, come here, right?
Yeah.
And those guys, they didn't flinch. They didn't do a thing. They just kind of sat there. And I think one of them handed the wallet to him or whatever the case is. But the theory is that, because I'm from LA, is that you always put your back to the wall and you watch the door.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what the entrance is and you know what the exit is, right? If you're an original gangster, if you're really OG, put your back to the wall and you look at the door. And so many small business people, they put their back to the door and not back to the wall.
Yeah.
Right. So what we were talking about is some ideas for podcast and, you know, my book company and some of these other things that we're doing. And anything I do and choose to do is I always look at the, like, what is it? Stephen Covey, end in mind.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And go, if I do this thing, where am I going to end up? And so many businesses I've never started because I went through that process in my mind. And when I got to the end of that business, I'm like, oh man, there's no exit to this thing.
Yeah.
Right. So everything I do has to have an exit. I have to be able to drop the keys off to somebody and they get to drive that business away or I don't do that business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every time I get on these podcasts and people drop gems like that, we were talking about this before, but it's almost like anticlimactic, right? You're like, that was it? Like that. Yeah. Obviously you would start with the end in mind. Right. But so many people, I think it's the allure and the excitement of a business. You're like, I just got to get going. Right. Mm-hmm. Like this is cool. You don't take a minute to be like, all right, how's this going to end?
Where does the excitement come from, bro? Where do you think the excitement of starting a business comes from?
I was talking about this with someone the other day. It's that human nature in us. Like it's just that creativity. Like we've got to create something. And I was talking about that on one of the interviews. Like even when you got some of these guys who just sit around and play video games all day, they're fulfilling that purpose in some fashion of like progressing and moving and like something new. Like even though it's a video game and you probably shouldn't sit down and play video games all day, you're still kind of, that's why it's so addicting is because you're still fulfilling that creativity That's a good example. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
And so it can be the death of you, or it can be very helpful depending on what you're doing. But it's
really funny. It's funny you should say the death of you, because I believe that every small business owner has an ego. They don't go, even Jordan Peterson has an ego. You have to have an ego. And so what happens is, so roll with me on this. You go to a barbecue and let's say you're the brother-in-law. So you're a successful real estate agent. And then your other, so your brother-in-law, so you're married to this guy's wife, and your brother-in-law, her brother, is making like ribs. And he's like amazing at these ribs. We've heard it time and again.
Yeah.
And you walk up to the guy and you go, bro. And the guy's a plumber, right? He does pretty well yeah. for himself. But you're like, bro, dude, you got to do ribs. Like, these are amazing.
Yeah.
Why don't you go do these things? And here's the trick. You have the ego. You are giving him these really great ideas and you're getting him all pumped up and stuff. Like, you get to go home in your Mercedes Benz and he's going to go back in the house. He's going to go, sweetheart, I'm going to start making ribs.
Trying to figure out how to make ribs.
And he's going to fail because he's a plumber. It's a trick. It's a full on trick, man.
Yeah.
Now, every once in a while, the rib guy makes it. He does. But if you go to the grocery store right now, I have a buddy who has a hot sauce or a barbecue sauce. Look at how many barbecue sauces are on the shelf.
Oh, there's a million.
And there's another million that never made that shelf.
Yeah, well, because it's so hard to get in.
It's so hard to get in that business. So you have to understand that when somebody comes up to you, and we've talked about this, at least when people are sitting here in these chairs, like, why do people sit here? It's part of the ego. Yeah. When somebody comes up to you and they come up to me and go, dude, you're the greatest. Kind of just look at them like,
Yeah. Like, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I hear you.
Yeah. Why are you stroking me? Right.
Yeah. 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 Totally. Totally.
So it's ego driven. People get in businesses all the time because of ego. Cause somebody told them that they were great.
Yeah.
Their mother, their father, their bishop, their teacher, their brother, their uncle, their brother-in-law.
Yeah.
And they're like, and they believed them.
Yeah.
Right. But if they were smart, the guy's like, look, bro, I know you're driving a Mercedes Benz, but in 5 years, I'll own you because I'm a plumber.
Yeah.
And plumbers make way more money than tech executives if they do it right. That's the trick.
All day,
Electricians, plumbers, mechanics. Dude, I got a guy around the corner who owns a multi-million dollar house and he fixes car. You get your car damaged, he paints it up and gets it all ready to go.
Insurance. Owns a body shop.
He crushes it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But everybody wants to do a podcast. Everybody wants to make a movie. Everybody wants to be a movie star. Everybody wants to be on TikTok.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway.
Well, and what's funny is like, I learned that lesson from this podcast, which is you're not paid for how hard you work or what you know. You're paid for the value that you bring to society and the value of your skills. Right. So like, that's why not everybody can go run SpaceX, like Elon Musk. Because you're like, well, he's a billionaire. And he's like, yeah, but could a plumber go run SpaceX, the Boring Company, Tesla, and Neuralink at the same time? Probably not.
And could Musk probably could, but could Musk fix his toilet? Well, he could, but he makes $1 billion an hour. So he's going to call a plumber.
Right, right. And so vice versa with the plumber, like, it's like the plumber, there's nothing wrong with being a plumber. Like, why would you want to go own Tesla when you can be a master plumber and make 200 grand a year or 150 grand a year, whatever you're making, right?
Precisely.
Like, and you know, it's those goals. But yeah, people get caught up. And that's why, I don't know, this book's been played out, but I read it before it was cool, before it got all over on TikTok. But that's why, I love the 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene. Mm-hmm. I think it's like, everybody kind of overhypes that book a little bit. Like it's really, you know, I've heard some people go like, it's really dangerous or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, no, if you break it down, like one of the things that I think saved my career came from that book. And that was the higher up you go in the hierarchy of a company, the more insecure people are.
Yeah.
So the more careful that you have to be.
Sure.
It's because of the ego.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I remember totally failing with this CEO one time. And then I read that book and I was like, holy shit, that's exactly what happened. It's like almost exactly what happened. Like,
Well, there's something you just talked about that most people don't have, and that's being self-aware too.
Yeah.
Like you actually step back and go, oh crap. So I've got a riddle to tell you. You've never heard probably before. Okay, okay. You ready for this? And we're going to work through this little riddle. It's pretty cool. And I think I invented it. You know how sometimes you read things and you're like, this is mine?
Yeah.
I think I invented it. Maybe I read it.
Okay. All right.
So there's a river and it's too wide for you to broad jump. You're at the edge of the river.
Okay. It's too wide for you to jump over.
And you have to get to the other side.
Okay.
You can't touch the water. There's no trees. You can't swim. There's no rocks. You have to jump over the river. If you land in the water, you die. How do you get across the river?
Shit, I don't know.
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
Most people will sit there for hours if I make them to figure out, and they will like, honestly, you can tell a character of a person because they're like, well, can I fly? Can like, I zap my fingers? Like they try to trick it.
Yeah.
So here's a little hint. What's counterintuitive, because you have to go forward. What's counterintuitive going forward?
Backwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
You back up. You back up. And then what do you do next? You run.
Run, yeah.
Most people will stay at the edge of that river for their entire life trying to trick themselves to get to the other side. But what you have to do, because you did this, is you backed up. And when you back up, Alan Watts talks about this.
Oh, I love it.
You can either look at the star or you can look at the galaxy. You can't look at both. So when you look at the galaxy, you get perspective. You back up, you get two things.
Yeah.
You get perspective because now you know how far you have to back up and then you gain momentum. You have to back up to go forward.
Yeah.
You have to back up. And most marriages fail and most businesses fail and most friendships fail because they're not willing to back up a little bit. Now, I've told this riddle for so many years and I had it half right. And one day I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm telling this riddle wrong. The river is the jerk off boss. The river is traffic. The river is your ego. To think that you're only going to have one river in your life is the stupidest thing on the planet.
Yeah.
Once you get to the other side, what do? You don't stop. You keep going.
Yeah.
And we do this all the time. And this came up when I was talking about how people get jobs. You go to college, get your resume, you do your internship, you show up, you're like, you show up on time. And then all of a sudden you get the job. And then what happens? You start sloughing. Right. No, dude, you got to keep that momentum.
Yeah. What's that? There's two quotes that I like to live by that I actually teach my kids and they have to memorize them. But the first one is that old Haitian proverb that beyond the mountain is another mountain. And then the other one is the from the Buddha, which is before enlightenment, chop would carry water. After enlightenment, chop would carry water. Mm-hmm.
Like, precisely.
You have to, like, what'd you think was going to happen? and I think there's a lot of religious implications with that I like to go into, but I think the implication there with like business is dude, like, you know, everybody wants to be the boss, you know, sipping Mai Tai in Tahiti, right? But like,
and what they don't realize is the boss is on their fourth marriage. They were there 20 hours a day and what they had to give up.
Yeah. And then Mai Tai is in between your 20 calls that he's got to field that.
And he's an alcoholic because he's drinking the Mai Tai. I mean, you really want that guy's life?
Dude. And that's what, you know, what's so funny is like, that was one of the premises of this podcast was that you know, so many people will look up to, we can name drop anybody, Gary Vee, Elon Musk, Warren Buffett, any of these guys. And they're like, this is unfair that they have this or whatever. And I'm just like, yeah, but have you just go 1 month, go find a job that will make you fly out where you're gone on Monday and you're home on Friday night every week. Mm-hmm. And that's like just a taste of how much you don't want to do that. I had an outside sales job like that. Mm-hmm. We'd leave on Sunday night. We get back on Thursday night. And I lasted 2 months at that job.
Yeah.
It was terrible. I'm like, I could not imagine doing this as a living or as a business owner or whatever, right? And then the fallacy that, oh, well, you just weren't doing business right if you did that. I go, well, then why are so many people, you're telling me that 90% of the people got it wrong?
I'm so glad you just said what you said. The person who said, well, you're not doing the business right. Well, who the freak are you to tell me that? Let me see your bank account. Really? How many businesses do you have? Yeah. We listen to people sometime in their criticism.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, why aren't you doing that? Well, let me look at your life.
Yeah. Right?
What? Take the freaking like beam yeah. out of your eye before you yeah. worry about the sliver in my eye.
Well, and not only that, but like, that's my counter. It's like, so you're telling me like 95% of people do it wrong, even if they're successful and you're the only guy who's doing it right. Like you're crazy, dude. That's like me, you know, that's like a buddy of mine. He's had 10 ex-girlfriends. It's not the girl, dog.
It's so true.
It's not the gender, bro.
It is so
that's you.
True. You hit home, dude. Like the beginning of this year in January, I made an intention to have like a close relationship with a woman versus just dating.
Yeah.
Because if this is the depth of where I wanted to go, I would go this far.
And I
only lived in this space and I only look for people in that space. And now I have this lovely gal that I love just dearly. And I've gotten that point because I've opened up my space to have that kind of opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing too is, and we've talked about this. So I migrated here from Southern California in 93 and I had a business before I went on my mission. And now I'm in my 25th business. And it's funny, I've lost sleep. I've looked back, I'm like, why didn't I do it this way? And why did I do it? Well, at the time, that's all I knew. And so you just learn as you go.
Yeah, you have to.
And at the end of the day, dude, when I close my eyes, I'm going to be so grateful that I went through my 50 businesses. And, you know, like I told you before, I had an online dating site and now there's human being. I was literally in a meeting the other day with one of my clients and I was meeting his office staff. And I just happened to throw out the name of this online dating site. And the guy that is paying me to consult, he goes, dude, my sister was on your site and got married. And I have now nieces and nephews because of you.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. It is wild.
And I sold that business off. And now I have people walking the earth. So you do business, you're going to affect people's life. It's not just about making money, man.
Yeah.
And you do these interviews with these people. I guarantee you, you're such a great, great guy, bro. That when people leave here, they're like, I'm a changed person. Like you change people's lives and they change your life. You've told me, we've sat here for an hour, how impacted you were.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I do these, it's always just about, just putting it out there. Like, I think the best definition I ever heard about karma was from, you like the UFC? I think we talked about this, but the best definition of karma I ever heard was from Dustin Poirier when he beat Conor McGregor or when the second time Conor McGregor broke his leg or whatever. Remember that? And Dustin Poirier got the mic and he said, karma's not a bitch. She's a mirror.
Yeah, dude. Right.
That was it,
bro.
That's the only definition of karma that you need.
Because, how come I've never heard that? That is amazing. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's it. That's the definition. I mean, and I've even read books where you can buy like, you know, Buddhist and Hindu and that's, and that like karma doesn't need to be malicious to get back at you. Like she doesn't need, to play any ulterior motive game or any like, mischievous game, like, cause it's not, you know, it's you. And so, and one of my favorite quotes is like, in Hinduism and Buddhism, it's the law of, it's karma. In Christianity, it's the law of the harvest. Mm-hmm. And in, if you're Mormon, in the Book of Mormon, it's the law of resurrection, which is you come back, coin for coin. Like if you know, everything is, not resurrection, it's the law of restoration.
Yeah.
If you come back, if you were bad, you come back like that. Yeah. If you know what I mean? And sure. So it's like, everything's restored back to exactly how it was.
Yeah.
And that's it, dude. Yeah, that's it. So that's why I do things.
And like, you have to study these things. You really do. And I'm so glad you brought it up multiple times about Buddhism. And
I love Buddhism.
I love it too.
I love Buddhism.
I went through some therapy. I had some situational depression in the day and I went through ketamine therapy and you know, guided in a clinic. Mm-hmm. And when I came out of it, I was so super clear that I was in the Provo Canyon and I had this company called Guides. And so I had been studying up on Sherpas. So I'd already known a little bit about Sherpas.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know this, but they follow the oldest, you know, preaching of Buddhism, like the OG, like, right. And, and I remember I recorded in my phone a book, it's called The Three Sherpas. And I actually wrote it. I haven't published it because they're an ethnic group, and I'm not quite sure if that's appropriate to call it that. But it's about these three Sherpas, and they're called Wisdom, Strength, and Love. And the names are Tibetan names. So they're literally, the names are Wisdom, Strength, and Love, and how they react on the mountain and act, and how you would if you were love and strength and wisdom and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I really grew to appreciate the teachings, not the religion, because it's not a religion, of Buddhism.
Which is,
that's Buddhism, what I love
more
about
philosophy.
It is.
Yeah.
Like they asked the Dalai Lama, like, why don't you proselytize us? Because we don't want everybody to be Buddhist. Like, just go do your freaking thing. Buddhist to say.
Yeah. And you can be, you can just be
anything.
You can call yourself whatever you want.
Yeah, it's right.
And oh man, I told this story once, but I love Buddhism because I read that book. What's that? The Hero with a Thousand Faces, Joseph Campbell.
Okay.
It's probably one of the best books out there, but it just like shows how these myths and how to tell a story and that why we love certain stories and why they resonate with us so much. Because when you look back at Buddhism, and there's what? Siddhartha Gautama, he's living in this life that, is lavish and he loves it. And the better way to put that is he's comfortable. And then one day he realizes that there's something else that needs to be done. Like, this isn't it. There has to be more than this. Like, this doesn't feel right. And so he goes out to this tree and he goes underneath this tree. And for the first time in his life, he decides to pray. And then he becomes enlightened. He gets it right. And I asked my mom and friends, I'm like, what story does this sound like to you?
Yeah, right.
The story of Joseph Smith.
Right.
You're like, holy shit, dude. And then this is the story of life, though, that when you become enlightened, like Buddha's life actually went downhill.
Yeah.
Joseph Smith's life went downhill.
Yeah.
This story also very similar to Muhammad's.
Yeah.
In our brothers and sisters in Islam.
Yeah.
And it's the story that just like, that's the life story. That's the human condition. Is you, it's the story. It's also the story of Adam and Eve. Like, you know what I mean?
One of the things that Jordan Peterson talks about is one of the hardest concepts in philosophy is consciousness.
Yeah.
So what's happening, and maybe this is what's happening, because I don't know what I'm talking about. Sure. Let's just pretend
I don't know
what I'm talking about. Is that once a person gets enlightened, they now have a conscious motive, and that's when they start living, and that's when crap starts to fall apart.
Right.
So in the case of Adam and Eve, they were unconscious.
Yeah.
They had the apple, so the fruit
was
the knowledge. Yeah. And now they're conscious of things, and that's when crap went to freaking, look at their kids, right? Hey, Cain and Abel.
Yeah.
Look, who knows? They probably had some marital fights and this and that. Like, they had to work for their food. They everything became hard. But isn't that beautiful? Like, we would not be here without these struggles. Without pressure, there's no life.
And to your point there, I love it because one thing, we were talking about a book, but one thing that's always going to go in my book is when I interview business owners, and you can tell me if this resonates with you, but when I interview business owners, they go through some of the most crazy, hard shit and that's one of the reasons why people will say like real entrepreneurship is very lonely, because even though you've got this group around you, like nobody knows what you're going through. And then you ask them, what would you do differently? And they said nothing. And then you get the answer, like, why not? Because there was no other way to get to where I am than that path. Like there couldn't have been.
Yeah.
And you're just like, all right, well, shit, I guess.
It's true.
And so,
yeah.
Yeah. And so that's why I don't know, dude, I love this conversation because it's bringing up so many things. But one of the things that I tell people, like, dude, you don't have to pray for hardships because the hardships will come.
They're there, bro. They're waiting.
Yeah.
They're so waiting.
Yeah. That's why one of my favorite verses is sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof.
Like, yeah.
You'll have enough tomorrow to deal with.
Here's the good news.
You know what I'm saying?
So that's good.
Yeah.
But here's what's even better. So I'm dating this wonderful gal. She's absolutely amazing. I just love her to death. And I've never loved any person or woman like I've ever loved her. And it's funny because she said something a couple months ago. She goes, Jeff, this may not have worked out a couple years ago, because what we've come to realize is the things that we've gone through with other people, we're not having to do it with each other anymore. We've already gone through those things. And now we've come, some people, what they do is they'll go in a relationship like this, or sometimes they'll go in a relationship like that.
Yeah.
for the longest time, for the last couple of years, because we've kind of untwined how we got together, we've been going like this, and now we're here.
Mm.
And we're now going in the right direction, but we've had some of the same challenges, right? And some of the same problems. And now we don't have to go through them together. So there's something to be said about the seasons of life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And business too. And like all those failed things. I interviewed a really awesome entrepreneur, Eric Espinosa. He's currently the CEO of Coconut VA right now. And I remember we were on a podcast together and he said, you know, you'll never know. I was asking him about like, how do you know about million-dollar ideas? Cause that's what he was going for. And he was like, yeah, you won't ever know your million-dollar idea if you didn't fail at the $1 idea, mm-hmm. or your $100 idea, mm-hmm. or if you didn't have some success at your little $1,000 idea that, you know, mm-hmm. that only your friends and family buy. He's like, you'd never know.
Mm-hmm.
You just, and so, yeah, it's kind of like, oh shit, dude. Yeah. You kind of have to know, and it's more than the cliche, like more, you have to know more than just the bad to know the good. You also have to understand like the mediocre. To kind of, all right, I think I'm on the right track, but I don't know if that, you know what I'm saying? Like,
isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, it is. I think it is.
Alan Watts, or is it Jordan Peterson? It's Alan Watts who said this. He said, they're very close in their philosophy, but it was Alan Watts who said this. He goes, if you woke up every morning knowing that you were going to win the game, would you play the game? If you knew you were going to wake up every morning knowing you were going to win the game, would you ever play the game?
I don't know. That's
I wouldn't.
Question.
It'd be
that's
boring.
Yeah,
you
yeah, yeah.
Me? If I played a 4.5 hour Monopoly game with my girlfriend and my sons.
Yeah.
And if I knew walking into that game I was going to win the game, I'm like, I'm not playing this game.
Yeah. Well,
it's the challenge.
Or at least it wouldn't be fun if I did, right?
Yeah. That's the thing for me.
You numb out and waste
most
your time.
People yeah. are entrepreneurs. Most of them are neurodivergent and most do it for fun. If you look at the number one reason they do a thing is that it's entertaining. If it's not fun, I'm not doing it, man.
Right. You know what else is funny about people being neurodivergent and starting businesses? I'm ADHD and a lot of my best ideas happen by accident. And actually a lot of businesses really successful start just, and accident might not be the right word, but definitely like serendipitous. Like it wasn't supposed to happen this way. Like I didn't envision it like this, but it fell in my lap and then it clicked and I was like, yeah, that's it. And that's super cool too.
We spoke for like an hour before we even got on this podcast and I still am so really enjoying this conversation. So I have a question for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you heard of the reticular activation system?
No.
So at the base of your neck, there's a thing called the reticular. Okay. And you use it all the time. So if you bought a Honda Accord today, what would you see tomorrow?
Bunch of a Honda Accords.
Right.
Yeah.
So the reticular activation system is really when you talk about something, and this is the secret. Careful what you say. Careful who you're around, right? Yeah. Jim Rohn, you are the five people you hang with. Careful what you think, because you're going to attract, it's a funny word.
Yeah.
People use it, overuse it, but you're going to attract that thing. And so if you're thinking about things, you're going to attract those things. If you buy the Honda Accord, you're going to get the Honda Accord. What you're doing and what you're saying, and I'm just translating, you said it perfectly, but when you said by accident, it was never by accident.
Right.
You had done something to be in that spot at that moment for the like something to make aware, to notice and to,
and
every good business person is a hacker, not a computer hacker, but the definition of a hacker is seeing an opportunity and exploiting it. Now you have a choice to exploit it the right way or the wrong way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You could have a brand that somebody takes shortcuts or you have a brand that goes the extra mile.
Yeah.
Right. Because what happens is you have action, you have results, and then you have brand. You take the action, if that action is you're cutting corners, you're going to have some sort of result that shows that. And then your brand is a cutting corner kind of person. But if you're the person who like long suffering, helps other people, we were talking about Dave Kent. We love Dave Kent. He's always helping people and veterans and stuff like that. But if you have somebody who's always giving and giving and giving, as soon as I said Dave Kent, I said five names and I said Dave Kent, you're like, bro, I love Dave Kent.
Yeah, dude, I met him at an event. Yeah, Sean Finnegan's events, yeah.
Sean's amazing too.
Yeah.
But they're givers and that's their brand.
Right.
And so you live in that honesty. And so the thing that we come about, like, you know, I'm now part of a co-owner in Restart Utah and I went to the event in January And I'm like, what in the, I didn't even know about the event till the day before. Business partner of mine was like, hey man.
Oh yeah. Last year. Yeah, I remember.
It was in January.
Yeah, in January, right?
It was over at the Sandeep thing with all the cars and whatnot. So I walk in there, I'm like, who even freaking owns this thing and what is going on? And I've never seen this. Like, it's like speed dating for businesses. And one thing led to the next, and I met Martin Miranda as my business partner now. And I'm like,
oh, I love Martin.
Isn't Martin great?
Martin's great.
Dude, his dad was a missionary, like in three different countries. And he's a very spiritual guy. Martin is.
I love Martin. Yeah.
Martin's a great guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, I had known him for months and months, and he just let it slip that he owned Restart Utah. I almost smacked him over the phone. I'm like, why didn't you tell me that? And I had seen an opportunity in that. I'm like, dude, I want to be a part of it because I know I can help with it. So guys like you and I and gals, right? Whatever, dogs, cats, whatever you identify as. If you're really good and you've been through the ringer, whether it's from a childhood or a business or sports or whatever it is, and you've had an experience, you have a different set of eyes and you can see opportunities that other people don't see. There was hundreds of people who went through that event who probably didn't see what I saw. One of the number one things I saw was, who's the face of this freaking thing?
Yeah.
He's shaking the hands of the people who bought these booths and did the sponsorships. Well, now I've solved that problem because I'm now one of the faces. I know I'm going to know every single person who walks into that place. And when they leave, they're going to be ready for the next restart because they're going to get treated so very well.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure you do the exact same thing. Like you look at an opportunity and go, dude, I know exactly how to monetize this thing. Like you do with, dude, it's a genius what you do monetizing this podcast.
Thanks, man.
And yeah, it's not normal.
No, it's no. Well, because you have to take and it's just kind of like restart, right? You have to take these things that everybody does and then you've got to reinvent it. And then I think people like the allure of the difference, right? That was one of my favorite quotes in sales was where there's no difference, there's no preference. And so
very good. Yeah. You have some really good quotes, man.
Just one-liners. Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome. You're one of those guys.
I do. Yeah. I mean, ADHD, that's how I have to live. Yeah. Everything gets broken up into whatever, but yeah, it's true though. It's like, oh, this is very different. I like this because it stimulates it a little bit different. You know what I'm saying? So it works, man. But yeah. So to break down Restart, I've heard about this. Has it been going on very long?
It'll be on its fourth year.
Fourth year. Okay.
Yeah. In March.
Okay. You said like small business speed dating?
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So essentially think about it this way. You have a booth and there's two people in the booth. You stay in your booth and then your compadre goes to the next booth. And then somebody comes from another booth, another vendor, and they sit in front of you for 3 minutes. And that's your opportunity to pitch whatever you're pitching. Now, the interesting part is you only have 3 minutes. And most VCs or like I've done a handful of investment pitch competitions and there's a trick to that 3 minutes. Uh-huh. That's your elevator pitch. Like if you were in an elevator and you were with like Tony Robbins or Bill Gates or something, like what would you say?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this in spades. And one of the things is why I've wanted to be on this podcast is because people like to do business. They like, you're a very likable person, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, right.
And so one of the first things you're going to want to do if you're in this event is make sure they like you.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
You
have to, there's politicians up there who really suck as politicians, but they smile all the time. And the ones who have all the facts and they do the right job and they kind of frown, people don't vote for them, even though they're the ones they probably should vote for.
Right.
So it's the likability.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's that charisma.
Yeah.
That suave. Yeah.
And it where does likability come from? It usually comes from not talking about myself, but talking about you.
Right.
So Dalton's like, bro, dude, it's really good to meet you. What are you doing here? Oh, I have a booth over here and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. This is what I do. And I think we could help you.
Yeah.
Oh, I know somebody who can help you.
Right.
By the time you're done and you leave, you're like, dude, that guy didn't say one thing about himself and he was trying to hook me up.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back and help that guy, Jeff Crane. Now, if you have 150 vendors, well, we have 100 to 150 vendors that do this over a 2-day period of time.
Well,
you get to know people at a very deep level. And you're also, and here's the best part about this event. I think most people don't understand this event like I do. You're volunteering to play by the game and the rules. When you go to a normal event and you buy a booth, which is the biggest freaking scams on the planet. Be careful when you buy booze, guys. If you go to any other event, and I'm not disparaging any events in Utah. We have billions.
But booze are
they're hard.
They're hard. I think that's the thing. Is like,
that is the thing.
Is just they're difficult to monitor.
Do you know why that is? Here's why that is. Yeah. So you get a booth like, look, bro, I'm going to hook you up. Let's say it's another event somewhere else. I'm going to hook you up with a booth and you're going to be in the vendors area. But we're going to have talks going on in the other room.
Right.
And panels. And they're going to have bathroom breaks. They're going to have coffee breaks. And they're going to get lunch. And they're going to come out in this 8-hour period for a total of an hour.
Yeah, that's tough, dude.
Right?
Yeah. That's
the tough. People are hammered listening to everybody in the first place.
Yeah.
You're out there transacting. That's a transaction. You're trying to get them. And so there's like this force field, this 10-foot barrier where people don't want to make eye contact.
Yeah.
They're going right by the booth. They're kind of like, I do this all the time. I don't make eye contact because if you get eye contact, they got you. You look at the title and go, if I can't understand what the title, what it is by the title of that business, I'm not doing business with them.
Right.
It's a billboard.
Right.
It's 4 words. That's the max you should have on any kind of billboard. Like you're cruising by at 75 miles an hour. It better say one call, that's all. It better say, I hear you, Ken Garf, right? It better be something like that. Or my old business, hotsaints.com. They'll wreck their car when they're like, what was that? And so our event has really great opportunities to grow. But I just use that as an example. Yeah, I'm just talking about Restart Utah, but I'm in my 25th business. You know, I told you I was doing movies at the end of last year for the last 3 years.
Yeah, what a cool experience.
And people are like, so did you go to school for that? I'm like, no. Right. I was like, well, how'd you do it? I'm like, well, I did it how I got through high school.
Yeah.
I used to give the juniors dates and they would do my homework. So I found a videographer. I found people with events. It's called NFT the movie.
Yeah.
And they would do these big old events. And I was the only game in town. I wasn't making NFTs. I was telling stories about it. I was literally, we as a team were the only company and it was called NFT the movie. So people understood what we did. When we walked in, we were mobbed by people because they wanted to be interviewed. And I was dumbfounded that there was no other media company like ours doing what they did.
Yeah.
And we captured the market because we weren't competing with them.
Yeah.
We were doing what you were doing. It's giving them a platform to talk about themselves.
Yeah.
It was such a wonderful experience.
Right, right.
Oh my
right.
gosh, dude.
That would be really fun. So it was like really kind of like fun. A documentary of just like how, tell me the premise of the movie. Like,
well, we have two documentaries.
Okay.
And what's funny is because we've talked about your podcast and what wins are, because some people think a win is a whole bunch of money in the account. I know very few people who have submitted a movie to Sundance Film Festival. We started our film in 2021 in May and submitted a film in September. We didn't get accepted, but the fact that we were able to submit a film to Sundance, I'm stoked.
Well, Sundance is
generally applications they have. 7,500 features, 4,500 shorts, and they only pick 200.
Wow.
No offense to Sundance, but every freaking film festival is an absolute scam because I did the math. If you take the 12,500 or 14,000 companies that didn't get in and multiply it by just a minimum of five people, and there's way more than five people in the production project, team. Yeah. There was over 30,000 people before Christmas that were affected that were hoping that they would get their film into that studio that they paid for their application fee to get in there. And that's their only way of doing business. I could care less. Yeah. Honestly, I could freaking care less if we ever got in.
Which is like, damn, that's why NFTs should have been bigger than they were. But because you could have changed the whole world with the right kind of play NFTs with those small media companies. You know what I'm saying? Like, damn it. I get sad a little bit.
You know, I'm hoping it comes back.
Yeah, the right way.
We did two documentaries, one that public hasn't seen and one that as a matter of fact, this time last year, we did a red carpet and it was called Magic City Ape DAO. Now a DAO is what's called a decentralized autonomous organization. And this documentary, the short documentary of 22 minutes, was about people who had owned Bored Apes. So this was a DAO of people who owned Bored Apes. Are you ready for this? So when we filmed it, we were interviewing people who were janitors that bought a $500 Bored Ape and it was worth 450 grand. And I asked them multiple times in the movie, dude, don't you want to sell it? Like, no. By the time I showed the red carpet, those Bored Apes were worth like $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 because the market had dropped.
Yeah,
market
had gone
down. So for me, the whole excitement of doing this movie was really just sitting down with somebody, literally looking them in the eye, and they're like, yeah, man, I'm going to change the world, and I'm going to change my world, and I'm going to do it with this and that. And I'm like, God barely believes this.
Yeah, that's crazy.
He's about to get waxed. Well, he has no idea, because one of the worst things a person can do is to lay their life on the line to say that they're right about something. Right?
Shit. Hey, yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, I know I'll put my, that's what the Crusades were for. And that's where everything else was. I will die for this. And you're like, are you sure?
And I'm LDS. I'm active LDS. But that's the time when some people think that, you know, some people think I'm going through a faith crisis or whatever, is because I'm like, yeah, dog, I've just seen too much to live in a black and white world. Like, it's not, I remember getting in a, you know, not an argument, but we got in a discussion with one of my former mission campaigns, and we were talking about whatever it was. And I was just like, dude, I've just seen too much. It's not as black and white as you think it can't be. Like, if we believe in the same God and he does the same things that we both teach, it cannot be that black and white. And so, yes, I get really nervous when people talk black and white. This is the only thing. And I'm like, oh, fuck. You know what I mean? Like, dang it. I don't think so.
You're going to appreciate this. So yeah. I was non-LDS, baptized when I was a kid, converted, okay, whatever. When I'm in mission to Brazil, the name of the mission was Camp Penis, which my mom's like, what camp are they sending you to? I love that. It's my favorite joke.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
And I did my thing and served my time and got divorced. And then I kind of went away from the church and sure, kind of hurt a little bit. But now I go to church. I go with my girlfriend, which is awesome.
Okay.
I don't take sacrament, but I like to go. I'll even bear my testimony about Christ because I have a testimony of Christ.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'll even go to my ex-wife's ward and sit next to my son so I can be with my son. And next to him is my ex-wife, and next to her is her husband.
Sure.
Because I just want to be with my son.
Yeah.
And I want to be in a really neat environment. But before, I used to have a problem.
Yeah.
And here's where the problem was. And I actually spoke about this at Thanksgiving with a friend of mine. And the problem was, I was living that life where I wore my suit and I did the things that I needed to do. But because I was doing that and I was watching myself, and I was being so careful with myself that I was also watching what other people were doing. And I didn't mean it, but I was in my mind, I was prejudging or I was preconditioning other people. I'm like, wait a second, why aren't they wearing a tie? And why aren't they wearing a suit? And why is their hair messed up? And why are they wearing jeans?
Yeah.
I'm that guy now.
Yeah.
I used to have really long hair, like probably like 12 months ago. And I got up at my ex-wife's ward with no tie. And I'm like, I'm that guy that you see in the ward that I used to, quote unquote, in my mind, judge, and I don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So I can walk into any place, any church, any, as long as I'm with people that I like and love, and I could probably get something out of it. You know, my time is limited, so I have to be careful where I go.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the faith of, like, I'm so glad you brought this up, bro. Yeah. When it comes to, especially in our culture, you have to follow rules. Like, that's part of life.
Yeah.
That's how you're happy, is following rules. Like, we had a time to do this podcast and I have to show up on time. Right?
Yeah.
And so I get the benefits.
Right.
But what you said is totally true. Like, this black and white thing, it's a little tricky.
Well, it comes down to this. And dude, I'm throwing out a bunch of quotes, so why stop now? But one of the other things that my kids have to memorize and that I kind of teach them and raise them by is strict with ourselves, tolerant of others. And that's the idea of not black and white. Like, yes, I have rules that I follow, but I know why I follow them. And like, I've been through, so I'll give you alcohol, for example. Like, religious reasons for not drinking alcohol is probably number 99 on my list. Yeah. Why I don't drink alcohol.
Right.
Like, number one is genetics.
Yeah.
It's, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, period.
Yeah.
So when people go like, oh, you don't drink alcohol because you're Mormon. No, actually, I had watched my mom have Grandma Caesar's on a table because she hadn't had alcohol in 6 hours.
Yeah.
Like, that's how bad it was. Right.
Yeah.
And my dad was born fetal alcohol syndrome.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure. So,
and I don't mean to say that other than like, just be careful.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
No, like,
you can drink alcohol.
Yeah.
And I'll go to the bar with my buddies and we'll go watch UFC at a bar named Sue, and they all drink and I'll have like my water or whatever I have. So it's just strict with yourself, tolerant of others.
I love that.
And that's why I don't go black and white.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, man, it's not. Anyway.
Judge lest ye be judged. We were talking about the Buddhist thing kind of thing. It's the karma, right?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And it's also, you know, there's a few other places where it's like, you know, the same as a person who looks in their mirror and looks at themselves and then leaves and forgets what they look like and then goes around their day and judges people.
Yeah.
Dude, you forgot what you look like in the mirror.
Yeah.
You forgot totally. All this acne that you're whatever, yeah. right? Like you're bald.
Yeah. No.
You know, but you know
I
what
do.
I'm saying?
It's I do like, know it's what you're empathy. Saying. Yeah. And it takes time.
It does. And it takes
time. How old are you, man?
29. Almost 30.
You're 30. I'm 54, bro. I'm going to tell you something. I'm like half 100 years old. And when I was like, you know, 20, I acted a certain way, right?
Yeah.
And I was 30. It's in the scriptures.
Yeah.
And I acted a certain way. And I was 40. And now I'm in my 50s. And when yeah. I get to my 60s and 70s, I'll keep looking back. I'm like, what a moron.
Right.
But I have to go through this process yes. to get to that end. And as long as I'm around people who love me and understand me and know, hey, that's just Crane. Like, by the way, you just call me Crane, dude. Nobody calls me Jeff. Okay. All my best friends call me Crane.
All right.
And I love it. Like yeah. my girlfriend calls me the Jeff Crane. You know what I mean? Like you are the Jeff Crane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
that's cool.
And I've stepped over myself so many times and I've tripped so many times that it's almost like a joke. It's like, yeah. I'll say things. My buddy, Chris Dayton, we talked about him. I said something yeah. the other day. He goes, you're the only one who could get away with that. And it's a wonderful life that we can have our own identities yeah. of the things that we've done right, the things that we've done wrong.
Yeah.
But we're still here trying.
Yeah.
We talked about Brandy Vega. She's just a wonderful influence in our community.
Yeah.
And she helps people who have stopped trying and, mm-hmm. you know, right. to a wonderful. Certain degree.
Yeah.
And she helps them to not ultimately stop trying forever and ever. You know what I mean? Like yeah. the self-harm thing. And she comes to my mind because she's the epitome of somebody who sees the worth in somebody. And it's like, look, man, your life is worth yeah. something. Let me help you.
Yeah. And one of those life-changing moments with me, just because you brought up Brandy Vega, but one big empathy developing moment for me was have you ever read the book Never Split the Difference?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so yeah. in the book, Chris Voss
yeah,
talks about
his movie.
Oh, what?
Come out. Yeah, he has a movie that came out
what?
In January. It was during Sundance. Yeah. It was,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Randy Garn invited us up there and he had his premiere.
I love Randy, dude.
Had yeah. dinner with Chris and he's yeah. an amazing guy.
Dude, funny story about Chris. His family's from Mount Pleasant, Iowa.
Oh, okay.
I'm from Keokuk, Iowa. Mount Pleasant's in our like district. Hmm. Played Mount Pleasant and Voss Petroleum. Like I knew, like that's what his parents did.
Oh,
they owned like a gas that. Company. Yeah. So anyway, but in Chris Voss's book, he was talking about how he wanted to become a negotiator.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that somebody else had done or that he was told to do was like go volunteer at the crisis text line or the National Suicide Prevention mm-hmm, line. Mm-hmm. And he would learn how to take somebody from hot
mm-hmm,
to cold.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a super big ego. I was like 23 or something like that. And I was like, fuck shit, I'll do that. And I'll just be a badass negotiator like Chris Voss. And boy, like, wow, dude, what he doesn't write in that book, if he did it, is how the reason he can be so empathetic and so cool is because he's seen how crazy people, like, I don't want to say crazy in a derogatory way, but how intense
mm-hmm.
these conversations can actually get.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and how they can go from just 0 to 100 mm-hmm. miles an hour in the first text message.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you don't get to know names. You don't get to know where, like most of the time they won't tell you where they are. And you're just like, holy crap, dude, like what if this could be. And the beautiful thing about not knowing the name on the, I mean, sometimes we know that, but we'd only know the first name,
mm-hmm.
right? So like if they gave us a name, it was probably only a first name.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, like in my experience, I didn't get a name. Even though I would ask, I would be like, what's your name? Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, look, I just want to, whatever.
Yeah.
Cause there's that anonymity. And it was like, dude, this could be anybody.
Yeah.
This could be coming from anybody.
Yeah.
Like, and we knew the demographics were mostly like LGBTQ in this mm-hmm. community, right? Or like some other minority community. But like the words could have come from my daughter's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, shit, maybe we should change our mind about how we treat people. You know what I mean? Like these just could be coming, like that could have easily, those words were not special to that specific person. Does that make sense?
It sure does.
You know, like, which is that, yeah. So that was one time my ego got knocked down a little bit because it was like, holy crap, dude.
If somebody asked me what I think of you, I would say he's a good father.
Oh,
you mentioned a couple times, like what you instill in your kids.
Yeah.
And, so Chris Voss's movie, his son was in it and his
Brandon,
son's
yeah.
amazing. His son's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, from boss to boss, you know, you helped his son and stuff like that. And it sounds like you're doing that with your kids.
Yeah.
Right. You're helping them with these things that you have them read books or quotes or what do you do with your kids? If there were dads and moms here listening, what are a couple of things you do with your kids to help them?
Well, I think the most important lesson that I could ever teach them is empathy. That's like, if you just sum it up into one word, I feel like you just have to try to get your kids to understand that, like, when they meet another, that's why I put my son in wrestling and my daughter in jiu-jitsu, is because that stuff prevents bullying.
Yeah.
Like, it prevents them from being bullies.
Yeah.
And it also prevents them from getting bullied.
Yeah.
But I love that. It just teaches empathy, because if you go into a wrestling room or jiu-jitsu gym, you step on the mat, you are liable to get your ass kicked every day. And there's something really sacred about that. And then you get to walk in a minute in their shoes and you could be like, man, I remember, like, I was that kid who, if my daughter can, or my son can go, man, I just got beat up yesterday. Mm-hmm. I know exactly how that kid feels. Mm-hmm. That's all you need. That's how the world starts to change.
That's beautiful.
You know what I mean?
I do.
And so, like, yeah, I do it with this kind of stuff, but it doesn't have to be that. Like, put them in music, put them in something where they can just take a humongous loss.
Yeah.
And then there's nothing that the parent can do about it.
Yeah.
Like, that's the other thing.
Right.
Everybody wants to teach their kids empathy. Nobody wants to sit back on the sideline and not do anything to help their kid learn. Yeah,
exactly.
It's a big lesson. You know, like, I'm watching my son wrestle and I can teach him and I can yell at him and I could even go stop the match and like help him whatever way, you know what I mean? Because I'm a coach, but you can't. You got to let him get beat up. You got to let him get pinned. You got to let him get hit in the face a couple times, even though the kid's cheating or whatever. You know what I mean? You just have to let it happen, even though it's one of the most horrible things you can feel as a parent. You probably experienced that, right? Mm-hmm.
Like, absolutely.
There's nothing I can do. Like, can you take this away from me? Nope, sure can't. Like, you have to learn this.
And isn't it ironic?
Yeah.
No matter where you are, and some people, and I understand, I have some really great friends who are atheists, so they don't believe in God. Yeah. But that's the story of God. God's like, look, Christ, go down there, son, go do your thing.
Yeah.
You can go through a lot of pain. I'm not going to fix it for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And by the way, when you ask for my help, I'm not going to be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you have to
do it. That. Let me tell you something that's interesting.
Yeah.
I learned this from a friend of mine who lives in Israel. And what had happened was he was dating his wife and his wife's like, listen, man, when we get married and we have kids, we're going back to the homeland. So he's like, all right, right on. So about 5-6 months ago, we were chit-chatting and I just so happened to tell him that I like to do morning study and I like to study a word. I think it's really important how we use our words.
Yeah.
And I'll look for the derivatives. He's like, I did that just the other day. He goes, do you know what the word perfect means? I'm like, no, what does it mean? You laugh. Do you know what I'm about to say?
Well, I know what the word means, but go ahead.
The Western philosophy or the things that we use the word perfect as to be spotless or to be without, you know, sin or whatever.
Yeah.
And actually the word derives from, it means to complete. Mm-hmm. The word perfect is like you've completed something. And then when you look back at the Christ story or any other thing like that, it's like the reason he was perfect is because he completed his father's mission. It's not because he was without failures. Like when he played baseball, quote unquote, he wasn't hitting grand slam home runs. We know he learned line upon line.
Yeah.
Right. And he had to grow. But it's so many times, and it's unfortunate, especially with the youth, and it does happen with adults, where people feel like they have to be perfect. They look at somebody else.
Yeah.
Like my dad always says, concentrate on the mountain, not the climber. Right?
Yeah, for real.
And all of a sudden, we look at other people on social media or the way that they will drive their cars. You know, as a matter of fact, we know this now. If we're looking at a BMW or a Mercedes, we're like, what's the payment and do they have a house? And like, just cause they have a nice car.
Yeah. Look, I had this conversation the other day. I was like, I know people who can actually afford Lamborghinis and actually paid cash for them and actually have them. And I've never seen them post a picture of it on Facebook.
Right.
Ever.
Precisely.
I don't have a Lambo.
Yeah.
And I'll probably never buy one because I don't like, but even if I had the money, I know who's got real money and can afford a Lambo and who can't.
Yep.
And we all can now.
And that's their path.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the path that they take.
I get it, dude.
Right. The rich man's path.
But I like that. I like the, cause I learned that too. And I learned, so Yeah. Complete. And then the other definition of, like, in the Hebrew context would be maturity is mm-hmm. perfection as well. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, there's, so you can be perfect in this life.
Yeah.
You can complete things and you can grow in maturity.
I perfectly make my bed every day.
and I'm growing every, like there's yeah. a spiritual maturity,
right.
like, and a, like I'm getting, you know what I mean? And, that's, I think, yeah. I remember telling that to a friend too. And he was like, I didn't know that was the definition. That would have saved me so much heartache.
Right.
And I was like, why, why didn't you ask? Or like, I don't know.
Well, in the old adage is it's a misnomer. Practice makes perfect, but that's not right. It's yeah. perfect practice makes perfect. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
yeah.
can practice something doing it the wrong way. You're still going to get the wrong results.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, before yeah. we started this podcast, we were talking about books and, you yeah. know, one of my businesses, we take these podcasts and we turn them into books. And what's funny is that when I first thought of this business idea, because I'm in the AI world, I thought, yeah. I'll just teach people how to do AI books. And it took me a couple months until I started doing my own book that I realized, I'm like, dude, this is so hard. Like, yeah. I can't teach both people how to do this. And then I saw all the restrictions. And as I was doing business with Debbie Hart and Sean Finnegan, whom we were talking yeah. about before, it dawned on me, and this will go back to our a perception, because perception of perfect is not really what it was.
Right.
But my perception was I wanted to teach a whole bunch of people how to do it a certain way. And as I was doing this process of taking their podcasts and turning them into a book, I stepped back and we've talked about this. I'm like, what am I really doing? What am I really doing? Not what I want to do, but what am I really doing?
Yeah.
And what I'm really doing is I'm taking ready-made content and turning them into a book. So I went to my business partners and said, hey, let's change our site. We do now ready-made content turning into a book. That's all we do.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, it was almost a letdown because my original idea was like, oh man, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But I had to take a step back and I had to take a look at what I was really doing versus what I was like hoping I would do. Mm-hmm. And I think so many times in life, people... they have this sense, we're using the word perfection. They have this sense like, well, I'm working out and I'm keeping myself fit and I'm going to church and I'm doing my thing. How come I'm not married? Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're not really looking at the things that they're really doing. It's like, well, are you opening the door for people?
Yeah.
Are you really nice with other people?
Yeah.
I was at an event last night, the RFK event, and I'll make sure that you're at this next one, but the Robert F. Kennedy event. And a good friend of ours, my girlfriend's and mine, was, it's really beautiful. He was standing right next to us and it was about 12 midnight. He sent us both a message, a DM. And he goes, I just want to let you guys know that I was watching you. And I loved how you were like hugging each other and loving each other and respecting each other. And I can tell you guys are like, wow, you have a bond.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's watching, dude. Right?
Yeah.
It's those little things that you're doing. So the perfection really comes in like this completion or this maturity. It comes in and what are you doing when people aren't watching you?
Yeah. Integrity.
In your business, uh-huh. in your life, or whatever it is.
And that word, by the way, is like, so I train salespeople and I look at business owners and like, okay, because the path to a successful business isn't always like linear and it's definitely not the same as everybody's path, right? Like if Elon Musk gave me exactly what he did to be at SpaceX, that's probably not going to work for me. You know what I'm saying? But there is one thing. So I never like success leaves clues and here's the blueprint. And I've never really bought into that, except there's is one thing. The one thing I found about success, the one clue I found about success after all these interviews, it just boils down to one word and that's authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Like
you're right.
It's just you.
Yeah.
Like the reason, like, you know, you're talking about Chris Tate and he's like, you're the only person who could say that because it's you.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you said it, I knew that it was you and it was genuinely you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'll let it slide because
yes.
he's being authentic.
Exactly.
You know, I knew a guy like that too. He'd tell people, hey, can I have a discount on this car? I'd be like, what the are you talking about?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And he would say it just like that.
Yeah.
But by the time he would say, they would ask that and say it, they would laugh with
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they would still buy the car without
yeah.
a discount.
Yeah.
Because they knew it was him. They,
yes.
He wasn't being,
yes.
he wasn't saying what his manager said. He wasn't saying what some book, you know, he was being him.
Yeah.
And that's why when there was a new guy and he saw that, he was like, oh, should I do that? I was like, absolutely not.
Nope.
I was like, no, please don't ever do that.
It won't work with you.
And he goes, why not? And I go, because it's not who you are. That's not you. You're the guy who does it differently. You can close that same deal, just not the way that he closed it. Right.
It's so true.
Yeah.
I have a buddy. We were business partners in Puerto Rico and he's such a great guy. His name's James and he's from Great Britain.
Oh yeah.
And people from Great Britain can tell you to piss off in such a charming manner.
Yeah.
And so he used to use this vernacular called, I'm going to slap you. So what he would do is he would warn you that he was going to insult you. Like an Italian would be like, hey, no offense, but I'm going to tell you you're ugly.
Yeah.
And so he'd be like, Crane, I'm going to slap you a little bit. And I knew that he was just about to cut me down and give me some criticism.
Yeah.
So we went on a trip to Puerto Rico and we bumped into this crypto billionaire, now a friend of ours. And he had opened up a conversation and he was talking about a family member and this and that. And I wanted to give my opinion. I had barely just met the guy. I'm like, hey, Brock, I'm going to slap you a little bit. And he looked at me. It didn't translate. Not in my English. It didn't. He looked at me like, what is going on here? I'm like, I just want to give you some advice.
Yeah.
And I never used that vernacular again because it worked for James because he had this great English accent. He was very charming.
Yeah. And it was him. And it just fit his vibe.
The way he was doing.
Yeah,
but the way I did it, I'm from East LA. He's like, is this guy going to beat me up?
You're going to actually slap
him. Yeah, am I going to slap him? And we became great friends because he understood that of my nature, but it's just that exact same example.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing. It's like authenticity. Like everybody's going to, it's that old book. If I could rewrite a book in one word, it'd be, why do people buy from you? And the one word is authenticity. It's just like, they know it's you. And people aren't going to buy from you for the same reason, which is great that they won't buy from you. Like you don't want, I've never been a fan of like you'll close 100%. I don't want to close 100%, dude. Cause I don't want, there's some people who are wonderful human beings that we just don't vibe. And that's totally fine, dude. Like they're going to live their life. I'm going to live my life. There's nothing wrong with his journey or what he's doing. There's nothing wrong with me, but like, we're never going to do business together. And that's cool, man.
I'm so glad you brought up sales. I think every single person, if I were president of the United States, there's a couple things that I would do. I'm like, look, man, you need to serve in the armed forces for a year.
Yeah.
You can go on a humanitarian mission for a year, or you can spend 6 months in jail, like whatever. Like I have a different way of looking at things.
Yeah.
But the subject that we just brought up, like I would mandate people, get a sales job, maybe door to door, right? Yeah. If I were president of the United States, because every sales job I've ever had, I failed miserably at the very first utterance. Even if I practice it for 2 weeks, I put my foot in my mouth and it's not about making the sale. It's about overcoming yourself and learning how to get past that and to grow. And man, what an experience.
Yeah.
To be able to be shut down, to go back, lick your wounds and go, okay, how am I going to do this a little bit better?
Yeah.
And then go back and do it and be like, I did it.
Yeah.
It's better than the sale.
Oh, totally.
Right?
Yeah.
In the relationship, like you're talking about authenticity, I can tell, bro, it's literally in your blood. But like whenever I would do sales, during my divorce, I called my good friend and old business partner, Todd Peterson. And I said, hey, bro, I need to leave town and I want to do some door-to-door sales.
Yeah.
He goes, you can go to Texas or Alaska. Where would you go in the summer?
Alaska.
Alaska. So I went to Alaska. And I was one of the top sales guys. And that's a conversation for another time. But doing door-to-door sales really teaches you, right? How to be humble, how to be authentic. Right. But every relationship every person I sold, I had a relationship with. They would invite me over for like King Crab.
Yeah.
They would want me to come over and watch the game because I would not do that job unless I really cared about them and their family.
Yeah.
And they made me a part of their family.
And then because they can feel that.
They did. They did.
They can feel it.
Totally.
And you don't have to, you know, there's a lot of special things that come with ADHD, but it doesn't matter what. It doesn't matter who you are. Like anybody can smell BS.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some cunning people and we can definitely talk about the outsiders later, but for the most part, people can do that. But, well, Jeff Crane.
Yes, sir.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that's right, buddy. You're my friend now. Crane
dude,
all the way.
I appreciate you coming.
We spent a lot of
time together, man.
It was awesome.
I love it. But before I let you go, I'm going to do everything, what I do with everybody. Where can everybody follow you, find you all that good stuff?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not really much of a social media guy, and people keep telling me to do it. You would think I would with all my tech companies, right? But I'm on Facebook, you know, Jeff Crane, and that's usually for friends and family and some business associates. And I am on LinkedIn.
Okay.
So they can look me up on, you know, Jeff Crane. Just look at my face and you'll see me there.
Cool.
But I want to say one last thing before I go. And, you know, we talked about this for about an hour before we got on this podcast. And you're creating a provenance. In the NFT world, they call it a provenance. And some people call it a pedigree, or it's your history. And every time you do an interview with somebody, like, you're kind of spreading your butterfly wings, right? You've done dozens, right? Like, well over 100 interviews?
I've done over 300
interviews. 300 interviews, yeah. Right? Like, I just keep doing it, man.
Yeah.
I just encourage you to keep doing what you're doing and to get to the heart of the people and whatnot, because the people on the other side of this camera that's watching us right now, they're going to resonate with something that you've brought out with somebody. I've never had this exact same conversation with somebody like I've had with you.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of the times you're doing this for us and you're giving us the light, but bro, you do a great job and you're doing a great service for our community. Some people are trash men, right? Some people are nurses, and you're doing podcasts and you're helping the community. So I just wanted to thank you.
Yeah, dude, I appreciate you. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks, dude.